We know business. We know China. From Beijing, this is Biz China.
A happy Chinese New Year and welcome to Biz China. I'm Rob Costello in Beijing, and in our show this week we learn how consumers spend and businesses hold up during the New Year and Spring Festival holiday period.
For China, we still see, you know, very strong optimism within the China market. It's very clear that family is still very, very important for Chinese consumers.
China's annual auto exports go past the 1 million mark for the first time.
Export is important. It should be a driving factor for the Chinese auto industry. Domestic automakers' annual output has reached 10 million, but currently export only takes 10% of the whole output. We are far behind the average level of auto export when compared with other big countries in the world.
And Gome finds itself running out of luck in Hong Kong.
It's very clear that Gome is finding the going quite tough at the moment in the electronics market, and there are a number of reasons that explain their difficult financial performance. Clearly, their sales are slowing while their costs are rising. So that's obviously a very difficult situation for performance.
That's all coming up in this edition of Biz China. This week sees people across China celebrating the nation's largest holiday and festival, Chinese New Year. Analysts see the Golden Week holiday as a chance to get a better look at China's consumption behaviours, expenditure, shopping habits and business performance. Global research consultancy firm TNS is releasing a survey and report on how Chinese spend their money over the New Year period and how it impacts business across the country. To learn more about the survey, Chen Mo speaks with CEO of TNS Greater China in Shanghai, Chris Bonsi.
TNS research reveals a mood of cautious optimism at Chinese New Year, balanced by financial concerns. Is the result beyond your estimation or expectation?
Well, I think for this study was conducted across five markets, and I think for China, we still see, you know, very strong optimism within the China market. So I think the results are speaking more of the Asia-Pacific region, but I think within China, I think there's still very strong optimism.
And what details impressed you most in this year's survey?
Well, this is the first year for our survey, and I think what really comes out across in our study is the importance of family within the mainland market. And if we compare the results across to Hong Kong, Taiwan, it's very clear that family is still very, very important for Chinese consumers.
Regarding what is the first thing that comes to your mind when you wake up on the first day of the Chinese New Year, over half of the interviewed consumers will first greet family members and visit friends and relatives. And after the reunion dinner, 79% will watch TV, while 63% will chat with family members. So can we interpret this as evidence as what you mentioned, a traditional very family way to welcome the Spring Festival?
Yes, absolutely. And I think if you look at the numbers of people in China who are visiting their families or relatives, it's much higher than the other markets across the Asia-Pacific region during Chinese New Year. So we do believe that the traditional family values are still very strong in China.
Among the things people want to buy for the Chinese New Year, food, beverage, fruits, new clothes are popular. Is this different from the shopping list of Westerners when they celebrate the biggest festival?
Well, I think it depends on which festival. In the Western markets, there are lots of different types of holidays such as Christmas or Thanksgiving. And I think probably the closest festival for overseas would be, you know, Thanksgiving for American families, where it's really about being with the family and celebrating. But Thanksgiving is not as long as Chinese New Year.
And this survey also reveals some big areas that people would like to spend money. And one is the over a third of the Chinese consumers plan to travel to a new country in a New Year holiday. And more than one third Chinese consumers plan to buy a new car. And buying a new house and changing jobs are also part of the plans for a quarter of those surveyed. So what does it imply when referring to people's deep desires in their hearts nowadays, like broadening vision and improving life quality?
Well, going back to the initial findings, I think we find that, you know, there is a strong sense of optimism within China. There are some concerns about the global economy, but within China, I think there is a strong sense of optimism, and it's being supported by people's aspirations. So I think the data isn't reflecting the actual number of people who will travel or buy a new car or buy a new house. I think it indicates the aspirations to improve their lives and to really, expand and expand their lives so that they can experience new things through travel or even through by, changing jobs and having different types of experiences.
About the red pocket money, and 63% of the consumers may deposit red pocket money into a bank, 1/4 may invest the money. And Chinese people are still willing to deposit rather than invest the money. So the New Year holiday is also regarded as a chance to get financial support for one's desires. Can we understand that in this way?
I think it's very different if you ask parents or if you ask people who are single, right? I think for parents, they tend to save the money for their kids, right? And in China, what's very interesting is that many of the parents allow their own kids to decide on how to spend their red packets, whereas in other parts of Asia, parents are less willing to do that. Most of the parents invest that money into accounts for their children. For singles, we see a very different type of situation in China. I think a lot of singles are willing to splurge for themselves and, for example, travel or buying electronics or technology, toys and so forth. So I think there's a very big difference between, families and singles in China.
In their different stages of life.
Yes, absolutely, life stage as well.
And this year's Valentine's Day is also in the Chinese New Year holiday. And is this good or bad for the consumption for the Valentine's Day? Is it going to be standing out or being mixed with the consumption for the Chinese New Year?
We don't have the past historical data, but we would assume that because the Valentine's Day is in the middle of Chinese New Year, it can be much more difficult for it to stand out. Okay, and I think the fact that people will be visiting families and relatives throughout Chinese New Year, it'll probably have an impact on spending for Valentine's.
What business opportunities are potential during the Spring Festival? An example is that almost 2/3 of the interviewed consumers do not take family pictures during the festival. Does it imply a big potential for the photo studios? This is just an example.
In the past, it might have, but I think since smartphones are becoming very popular, I think people are, taking pictures, with their smartphones or with their cameras themselves. And a lot of these pictures tend to be a lot less formal, and so I don't think there's a big opportunity in terms of the photo studios.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest opportunity in China during Chinese New Year is really around gifting.
Around gifting. People will choose different gifts to family members or relatives, employees, friends, like electronics or iPad or some pocket money or new clothes?
Yes, absolutely. In China, gifting during Chinese New Year tends to be a lot higher than in other markets. So gifting is very, very important during Chinese New Year.
And is the Chinese holiday also a business period for foreigners or travelers here? Will foreigners or travelers be attracted?
I think a lot of foreigners, this isn't from the survey results, but I think a lot of foreigners use this week holiday to travel, and some people travel, within China. Many people travel overseas as well. So I think it's a time for both, I think for most of the foreigners, is to either rest or travel and explore as well.
Did you find any big differences for consumer behaviors in the Chinese mainland, Hong Kong and Taiwan?
Yes, I think the biggest difference is really in terms of the financial outlook for the future, is that mainland is definitely the most optimistic. Taiwan is the least optimistic, and Hong Kong is in between.
Mm-hmm.
The other real difference is really around the importance of family. Mainland is the most important, followed by Taiwan, and then by Hong Kong. So we do see significant differences.
Chen Wu speaking there with Chris Bonsi, the CEO of TNS Greater China, based in Shanghai. You're listening to Biz China, and you've missed any episodes. Download our podcast on iTunes or check out the show online at crienglish.com. China's annual auto exports hit 1.05 million in 2012, marking the first time the figure has gone over 1 million. This is an increase of almost 30% compared to 2011, and the main importers include Brazil and Russia, amongst others, and analysts say China's auto exports still have big potential for growth. For more on China's car export market, Zhou Jingnan gives us this report.
China first began slowly exporting vehicles in the late 1950s. However, since 2001 and the entry of China to the World Trade Organization, the country has stepped up its export speeds and volumes. Deputy Secretary-in-Chief of the China Association of Automobile Manufacturers, Shi Jianhua, details the rapid growth.
2002年汽车出口2.8万辆，快速上升到。
In 2002, China's auto export was 28,000. In 2007, it was 614,000. In this period, the export destination countries were mostly in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, were the third world countries. Take the market in Algeria, for example. After Chinese auto entered Algeria in 2000, more than 30 automakers exported vehicles to Algeria, including cars, microbuses, and trucks.
However, with the global financial crisis hitting in 2008, China's automobile exports saw a slowdown and experienced a greater number of trade protectionism disputes. Shi Jianhua explains how since 2010, auto exports have been gradually recovering.
经历了前两年的市场波动后，我国汽车出口
After 2 years of market fluctuation, China's auto export was back to a fast-growing track, not only in traditional markets like the third world countries, but also in emerging economies like India and Brazil. In 2011, the auto export was 850,000, and in 2012, the figure was 1.05 million. BRICS countries like Brazil and Russia are now our important markets.
Over the past 10 years, China's auto exports have seen annual growth of nearly 49%. Chinese car makers such as Chery and Lifan have even started building new factories overseas and are upgrading their services in foreign markets. Secretary-in-Chief of the China Association of Automobile Manufacturers, Dong Yang, says there are still big opportunities for China's car exports.
Export is important. It should be a driving factor for the Chinese auto industry. Domestic automakers' annual output has reached 10 million, but currently export only takes 10% of the whole output. We are far behind the average level of auto export when compared with other big countries in the world.
Analysts highlight some of the problems facing Chinese carmakers, such as weak cross-border management, unfamiliarity with international regulations, and a low ability for innovation. Shi Jianhua says the competitiveness of China's vehicle exports could be raised through the research and development of new technologies. He also suggests Chinese carmakers purchase overseas technologies and brands to gain new competitive advantage. Zhejiang-based Geely and their purchase of the manufacturer of the iconic London black taxi, British Manganese Bronze, for $17 million is a good example. Shi Jianhua believes there are two key areas that will boost China's auto exports.
There is a huge space in the global auto market. Developing countries keep strong demands. That's good for China's automakers. China also has a big auto industry, providing strong support to export. The country also has a series of policies to boost a healthy, sustainable development for the auto industry, also create a fair competition environment for auto export.
Xiamen's King Long Motor Group exported nearly 20,000 bus coaches last year, with 9 models gaining certification from the European Union. Deputy President of King Long, Lu Huihua, expresses her confidence in the international markets and her company performance.
China's coaches have surpassed those made in Japan and South Korea. Our products are popular in developing countries. But our goal is not only to surpass Japan and South Korea. We expect to surpass European and American competitors to gain market share in Europe and America.
As China's car exports pass the 1 million milestone, The country's car makers continue to look for new knowledge and advantages in the international markets to ensure long-term growth in the future.
That was Zhou Jingnan reporting, and you can get in touch with us via email with any questions at bizchina@cri.com.cn. You can also catch up on any episodes you missed by downloading our Biz China podcast. Just type Biz China into the search box in the iTunes store. In a statement announced on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, one of China's largest electronics retailers, Guome, says it may have a net profit loss for 2012. It will also be removing itself from the Hong Kong retail market and is closing down all six of its stores in the special administrative region. The retail giant says it will instead turn to bulk trade business to expand its international presence. To learn more, Chen Mo speaks with Philip Smiley, CEO of Kantar Retail Asia Pacific in Shanghai.
Electronics retailer Guome had revenues of 36 billion RMB in the first three quarters of last year. The figure was less than half of its rival Suning. So what are the major reasons?
Yes, I think it's very clear that Guome is finding the going quite tough at the moment in the electronics market. I think there are a number of reasons that explain their difficult financial performance. I think if we look at the mainland, clearly their sales are slowing while their costs are rising. So that's obviously a very difficult situation for performance. In addition, I think perhaps demand is declining to some extent in the mainland, and that is impacting Guome's sales. Also, Guome is sort of, by their own public announcement, are playing catch-up in e-commerce, so are making big investments to try and catch up in online retail and e-commerce, and that those investments clearly impact their results. And whether we know they're trying to integrate their two e-commerce platforms into one, take all those things on the mainland, and then you also include the fact that they've exited the Hong Kong business. I'm sure they've incurred some costs around doing that. All those things probably create quite a difficult set of results for Guome at the moment.
And some say the electronics retailing as a whole is not so good, and the company may fall faster than others because of its own problems. So is the case a single one, and how about the bigger picture of the electronics retailing in 2012?
I think although there has been some concern about the economy cooling and that affecting electronics markets, I think generally people have a lot of positive sentiment about the prospects in the electronics market. Perhaps the market will shift from one of penetration-based growth to one more of replacement growth, where people are trading up or replacing old with new. Generally, and the positive sentiment at the moment on the economy would tend to feel that there's a lot of positive feeling about the potential for electronics market. Perhaps the growth will not be as quick as it has been in previous years, which is a factor of kind of a natural maturing of the market. But there are very few people expecting it to be a negative market next year.
And how much does the macroeconomy and consumer confidence affect electronics retailing?
Well, it definitely does. I mean, how well off people feel impacts when they decide to purchase a new appliance or a new TV or a new device. People's minds on how much disposable income they have definitely plays a factor. It's very easy to delay, for example, if you want to replace your TV, you can easily delay 4 or 5 months if you don't feel you have the money right now. So definitely the wider macroeconomy can impact on the purchase cycles. So consumers will tend to extend purchase cycles when they feel less positive about their incomes. But yeah, on the other hand, if you look at the smartphone markets and the mobile phone markets, they continue to grow irrespective of any macroeconomic situation.
And what is the major difference between electronics retailing and other products retailing? Could you elaborate to our listeners?
Yes, I mean, I think electronics retail in the mainland is probably more advanced than, say, the retailing of hypermarkets and supermarkets. When I say advanced, it's they've built much bigger store networks. So companies like Guome and Suning have got much bigger store networks than, say, Arkimar or CRV would have in the hypermarket channel. So it's a relatively advanced channel in terms of its store networks. And I think it's actually Suning and Guome are some of the biggest retailers in revenue terms in China. In addition, the online retail has made big inroads into electronics market and much more so than it has, say, in the market for, say, fresh fruit and vegetables or daily groceries. So definitely a different market to other parts of retail in China.
And in Hong Kong, the company has announced its retreat from electronics retailing, closing 6 stores and laying off about 100 employees. And it plans to make a strategic change from retailing to block trade. So why Hong Kong is a good place for block trade? Because of its low taxes and easy logistics?
Yes, I mean, Hong Kong is a well-known sourcing hub for global retailers. Many global retailers have sourcing teams in Hong Kong, and those teams are responsible for selecting products and sourcing products and negotiating prices with vendors. So Hong Kong has a big sourcing center. Taxation helps that. It's a very busy port as well. So all those things come together to make Hong Kong a key focus for wholesaling and sourcing.
On the Chinese mainland, the company is integrating, as you mentioned, online service. So what would be the advantages of a traditional electronics retailer changes to online service? Can online service save traditional electronics retailers?
I think in some cases it's not a choice of one or the other. I think most physical electronics retailers also operate online sales. I don't think it's about being in one or the other. There are, of course, some specialist online retailers that only have online business. But clearly, store-based business is coming under pressure as online grows, which means I think any electronics retailer has to have a strong online presence and also has to figure out how to make their physical stores profitable and successful as the pressure for those stores grows because of the growth in online. It's not necessarily a one or the other. One can't save the other. Any successful retailer needs to figure out how to run successful shops, physical shops, and to be successful in online retail and also manage the integration between the two.
Going deep into the third or fourth tier cities is a choice for many retailers nowadays in China. So what should be cared about in this process?
Yes, you're right. It's a big focus for many retailers because many of the markets in the more developed cities are considered to be a bit more mature or slightly more saturated than, say, the lower tier markets. So the lower tier markets are growing faster. Consumer incomes are still rising there. And the opportunities for penetration and sales growth are high. So it's a strategy that many, many retailers in many different types of categories are pursuing at the moment. I think the challenges with that or the watch-outs there are about finding the right sites, the right locations is obviously a challenge. There's a lot of competition for locations in lower-tier cities. That's definitely a concern. The other is being able to successfully execute the operating model in lower-tier cities, you know, finding the people and the skills and the capabilities that you need to run your store successfully or run your operation successfully. So capabilities are very important, and property and location are very important.
In recent years, we often see price war among electronic retailers. How should we understand the risks of the price war for the electronic retailers?
Well, the price war will certainly put pressure on margins. There's definitely a price war right now in China between the physical retailers and the online retailers and between the different online retailers as well. So Suning.com is fighting with 360buy.com. So we see a very aggressive price competition at the moment that is going to put pressure on margins. It will force retailers to look at their costs, reduce their cost bases, close or shut underperforming assets. So if they have stores that are not performing well, they'll be closed. So it will create a lot more pressure on cost in the system as margins decline because of price reductions. At the moment, there's no sign of the price competition slowing down. So I think it's going to be a difficult time ahead.
That was Chen Mo talking with Philip Smiley, CEO of Kantar Retail Asia Pacific. And that's all we have time for on Biz China this week. Get in touch with us with any questions or comments at bizchina@cri.com.cn or download our Biz China podcast on iTunes. And you can also visit us online at crienglish.com. From all of us here at Biz China, a Happy New Year and Spring Festival. I'm Rob Costello in Beijing, and we'll be back with more top business stories next week.